This is Evan Dietrich Smith, and you're watching Cheesehead TV.
Good morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. Joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football. We're trying to examine the grim life without Aaron Rodgers on today's episode. To help us do that, we have our regular weekly Wednesday guest joining us, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, are you doing better than Aaron Rodgers today?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing better than Rodgers is. I'm sure Rodgers is still in some pain, I'm feeling just that.
I'm sure he is as well. But, what are the Green Bay Packers missing in Aaron Rodgers? You know, how is he stacking up against the rest of the quarterbacks in the NFL to kind of put this in perspective how big of a loss this could be?
Oh, yeah, Rodgers rated as so far as our third best quarterback in the league, just behind Peyton Manning and Phillip Rivers. That's typically where we've seen Rodgers in the past few years as well, typically making second. He also made first one year. His rating isn't as high as it typically would be at this point just because he had some below-average games against the Bengals and Ravens this year. But even with a few games that were below average, he's still better than almost all the other quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, an average game from Aaron Rodgers is better than a lot of others. But, is this the biggest loss perhaps in the entire NFL just because of the drop-off between starter and backup? I think, you know, the Packers probably have one of the weaker backup situations in the league.
It certainly could be. The only other situation where it could possibly be worse is Denver, and that's mostly because we haven't really seen Brock Osweiler play in the NFL yet, so I don't know how well he would do as a starter. But if he's terrible, then Peyton Manning for Brock Osweiler might be the worst, but Aaron Rodgers, if anything, is the second worst loss a team could have.
What hope do the Packers have for Seneca Wallace? Will he be able to produce better with a week of practice under his belt than he was this past week against the Chicago Bears?
I certainly think any quarterback, after having that week of practice with the starter, should do better compared to a game where he's rushed in because the starter is hurt. So I definitely think Seneca Wallace will play better. He did have a couple of nice completions for first downs in that game mixed in with those few four throws. Probably the biggest concern I had with Wallace is he was under pressure 9 times, and 4 of those times he was sacked. So that's a really high sack-to-pressure ratio of 44%, where typically the league average is closer to 18%. So I think if he can avoid getting sacked that often, looking at the schedule, there's certainly hope left for the season.
That was one of the more disappointing things for me, was to see very little elusiveness, and perhaps I should have seen that coming just given his age nowadays. I thought he'd be better in that department than what he was. The Packers are reportedly checking into Matt Flynn, who's looked good in a Packers uniform, but not very good anywhere else. Will he look any better playing in Mike McCarthy's system once again if the Packers do go out and sign him?
I do think there's certainly a chance that Flynn will look better than what he's looked other places. The only place we've really seen him play is Oakland, and the talent there isn't nearly as good as it is in Green Bay. So just the players around him should make Flynn better than how he was looking in Oakland. I'm not sure if anything has changed with Matt Flynn from when he was last with the Packers to now, which is making teams not consider him as an option. So there might be something that teams know that we don't know. But Flynn should look better as a Packer than he was looking with the Raiders, just because of who's around him.
James Jones came back this past week from injury, but made pretty little impact. Now, Do we blame James Jones' lack of production on the quarterback situation? You know, he's coming back off this knee injury. He missed two games. It was nice to see him healthy enough to play. But, I mean, do we kind of, you know, look at, hey, Seneca Wallace really wasn't prepared to play in this game? Is that the reason maybe James Jones didn't have much of an impact?
I think the reason he didn't have much of an impact was simply lack of opportunities in this game. Typically, James Jones, when he's healthy, is playing nearly every single snap, maybe taking one or two plays off. But outside of that, being in for every Packers passing or running play. Where in this game, he was only playing in roughly half of the snaps, which was likely just a precautionary easing him back into playing rather than putting him in full blow. So he only played in 50% of snaps. And then also with that, the Bears did a good job controlling the time of possession, especially in the fourth quarter. So the Packers only ran 55 plays, including penalty, which is much lower than the 70 they typically run. So James Jones only ran 17 pass routes in this entire game and was targeted twice there. So I think a lot of it really just had to do with only running 17 pass routes instead of running the 40 to 45 that we are typically seeing him run.
Fair enough. We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Nathan, with Rodgers gone, the spotlight is probably now more on Eddie Lacy than any before. Last week, he had a really good week against the Chicago Bears, running for 150 yards. And last week on the show, we actually talked about how he stacked up against other rookies and the kind of how he's doing in the Rookie of the Year race. But how is he stacking up against other running backs in the NFL? Any chance for like a Pro Bowl for Eddie Lacy?
Yeah, he's stacking up very well, and I think a Pro Bowl is certainly within question. As long as people vote for him, he's worthy of making the Pro Bowl at this point, I'd say. In terms of just running, we have him as the fifth highest rated running back behind LeSean McCoy, Marshawn Lynch, Alfred Morris, and Arian Foster. And then if you throw in receiving, where Lacy has been average so far, guys like Giovanni Bernard of the Bengals, who's also a rookie, passes him. And then backs that are mostly receiving backs like Danny Woodhead and Darren Sproles also pass him. But Lacy is doing really well. He has 4.4 yards per carry, which is very good but not great. But part of why he's so far up in our ratings is also because of how often he's having opposing players miss tackles on him. He's had 25 players miss tackles on him on his run so far, which rates the highest in the league.
Does missed tackles include, like, breaking tackles, like running through them?
Oh, yeah, that includes those as well. Anytime that we would say a defensive player missed a tackle on the running back, then we also credit that to the running back for having a player miss tackle on him. So running through a tackle, as long as the defender should have made the tackle and didn't, that's what's counted there.
I gotcha. That's really good news for Eddie Lacy. The Packers had some adversity along the offensive line this past game. TJ Lang goes out with a concussion, so when that happens, Don Barclay switches from right tackle to right guard, and then Marshall Newhouse kind of got his first extended playing time of the season. How did these guys look at their new positions, or, you know, in the case of Marshall Newhouse, kind of getting his first extended playing time of the season?
I would say they looked okay in this game, especially in run blocking. Don Barclay did a really good job handling the Bears' defensive tackles in the second half of the game, so run blocking Barclay looked really good. But he did have a bit of a problem blocking Corey Wooten, who's typically a defensive end, but has moved to defensive tackle this season due to how many injuries the Bears have had at defensive tackle. So a Barclay allowed a pressure at one point in the third quarter to Wooten, and then also allowed one of those sacks on the final drive to Wooten, which was in large part Barclay's fault. So run blocking good, pass protection not as good, and then it was very similar for Marshall Newhouse. Newhouse looked just fine blocking Shea McClellan, who is typically one of the worst defensive ends in the league in run defense. So Newhouse didn't have a great opponent to go up against, but he looked good going up against him. And then again, in pass protection, struggled a little bit there. But it was also not a huge sample size. So if this continues up, Lang has to miss more time. I could see the Packers doing okay with Barclay at right guard and Newhouse at right tackle, but it being really dependent on who the opponents they're facing are.
Be interesting to see how Derek Sherrod fits into the situation now that he was just activated off the PUP list. Perhaps he could be in the mix. But, you know, we've talked about here this morning a lot about the Packers' offense and how they're going to perform without Aaron Rodgers. But let's briefly take a look at the Packers' defense here, Nathan. I thought the secondary was particularly poor on Monday night, kind of getting abused by Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Marshall. Who do we point a finger at? Who was kind of at fault the most in the Packers secondary, you know, kind of both with missed tackles and giving up some ground in coverage?
We had Devon House as the lowest graded player in terms of coverage in this one. He only allowed 3 catches for 40 yards, but one of those was a touchdown. The other 2 went for first downs, and then he didn't really make any good plays to make up for that. Where someone like Tremont Williams allowed a few more catches and a little bit more yards, but he also had a couple good plays where he did something to prevent the receiver from catching the ball. So the good helped outweigh the bad a little bit there for Tremont Williams. And then Sam Shields also had a negative grade in this game, but a lot of that had to do with his run defense. Part of why the Bears had such a good run game is they were able to run to the outside, where the Bears' physical receivers were able to successfully block Shields, and that helped lead to some of the Bears' better run.
Kind of a silver lining, I thought, was the play of B.J. Raji this past game. Was this his best game of the season, in your opinion?
I think it's certainly in the running for one of his best games of the season. He had 3 nice tackles for either a loss or short gain. He did a good job stopping the screen passes, sniffing those out, and making sure that the Bears didn't complete passes there. And then he also had a nice hit on the quarterback. But there were also a number of plays where he was successfully blocked by the Bears' interior offensive linemen, which helped Matt Forte have a good game and helped that fourth quarter Bears' 9-minute drive. So there was definitely a lot of good for Raji, but there was also a little bit of bad. But all that considered, it was certainly a good game, and he has had a couple other good games this season, but this one's definitely up there with those games.
Life goes on for the Green Bay Packers. Just because they lost Aaron Rodgers doesn't mean they get a pass or they don't have to play. They get back to action this upcoming Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles. You mentioned before the Packers only had 55 plays. This past game. Now they're playing the Eagles. This under Chip Kelly, this is kind of a team that's known for this up-tempo offense and you know, getting lots of plays in a game and things like that. Tell me about the Eagles, Nathan, and maybe I think fresh in everybody's memory is also the 7 touchdown performance from Nick Foles here. You know, what do the Eagles have going for them?
Eagles have Nick Foles, who just had 7 touchdowns against the Raiders, but I think a lot of that had to do with the Raiders' secondary and how poorly they've been playing this year, so I don't think there's any chance that Foles scores 7 touchdowns again against the Packers. I think this game will really come down to who can run the ball better. A lot of why Matt Forte was able to have success against the Packers is not only did he do well, but his run blockers did well. And the Bears have one of the best run-blocking offensive lines and other players in the league, where the Eagles have our highest-rated running back and the highest-rated run-blocking offensive line in the league. So I could see the Packers having some difficulty stopping LeSean McCoy if the Eagles are able to successfully block a lot of the Packers. But then on the flip side, the Eagles have 2 very good defensive ends in the 3-4 defense, Fletcher Cox and Cedric Thornton. Have been playing excellently, which could especially be a problem if T.J. Lang is unable to play. But if the Packers are able to scheme against those 2 players this time, the Eagles linebackers have missed a lot of tackles this year. Their safeties haven't played well, so as long as the Packers can do something, whether it's double teams or running away from Cox and Thornton, the Packers should be able to run the ball pretty well as well. And then the Eagles also don't have a great secondary, so if the Packers can take advantage of that, the secondary is there to be taken advantage of.
Well, we'll find out if Seneca Wallace is able to take advantage of an Eagles secondary. We'll talk about that with you next week, Nathan. I appreciate your time here on a Wednesday morning, as we do every week. And we'll talk to you again next in 7 days.
Yep, thank you. Have a good one.
All right, take care. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us, as he does every Wednesday, here at CheeseheadTV.com's Railbird Central. Thanks to him. Thanks for you, the listener, for joining us as we kind of continue our discussion here of life without Aaron Rodgers and how grim of a prospect that kind of is right now, as the Packers, we're not really sure how long he's exactly going to be out. Aaron Rodgers talked about his injury on his weekly radio show on the ESPN radio affiliates in Wisconsin, or at least in Milwaukee and Madison yesterday, and kind of gave some details about what happened in the broken collarbone and how he landed on it and the pain he's dealing with. But, basically said he's still going through testing and they don't really have a timeline for return. And, you know, I kind of think, you know, in the aftermath of Monday night's game, there some people were saying he'll miss 3 weeks and, you know, or about a month or so. And I think what you're get the feeling now, and I know our own Zach Cruz here at Cheesehead TV, he had said the same thing on Twitter yesterday that I have to agree with. And he's like, this 3 games is looking like a best case scenario for Aaron Rodgers. And just based upon what I've read, what I've heard, you know, what I saw for myself in Aaron Rodgers and the injury he sustained on Monday, you know, I concur. I think we're looking at 3 weeks maybe being a best case scenario. And, you know, perhaps even 4 weeks would be a little optimistic, seeing as, you know, the Packers have 3 very manageable games here in which they can perhaps, you know, get through a stretch here with, you know, out of their next 3, winning 2 out of the 3, even without Aaron Rodgers, just because they're playing somewhat poor teams. I mean, it's not going to be easy with Aaron Rodgers at all, no doubt about it. No game is a gimme now. In fact, I think I had seen who on Twitter yesterday that the Packers started off as 10-point favorites against the Eagles, and it's down to 2.5 points. I mean, we're talking about more than a touchdown difference in terms of how Vegas at least is perceiving this game, and I can't blame them. I mean, you're missing arguably the best quarterback in the NFL, so that is a drastic defense. John on the live log says Wallace will be better than this week than last. I do agree about that. You know, certainly with a week of work under his belt in which he is the unquestioned starter, you know, heading into the game, Seneca Wallace, I do think, will be better, more prepared, more in tune with the offense, more in tune with the receivers he's throwing the ball to, getting timing down. All those things are important. I do think they will help. Like I said, though, no gimme. You know, they take on the Eagles this week. They take on the Giants next week, finishing off a 3-game stretch with the Minnesota Vikings, who the Packers already beat once this season. It's manageable. It's not going to be easy, but it's manageable. The Packers could possibly, you know, my hope is they get through these 3 games with 2 wins. If they do that and then get Aaron Rodgers back, I think they're in a good situation. I, the 4th game back is of course the big one. The one everybody's kind of looking forward to next for the Packers is their next big game, I think, because it's first of all, it's against a division rival, the Detroit Lions, but it's also, you know, on national television on Thanksgiving Day when the whole nation is watching, you know, and as big as Thanksgiving and football go together, you know, a lot of the country will be seeing this game. And the Lions are good this season. But, you know, being on a Thursday, that's 3 less days than usual. You know, if we're talking about the typical Sunday games, as most games fall on, I realize they play on Thursdays, they play on Mondays, but, you know, that's 3 days before you know, the typical game, three kind of less days for Aaron Rodgers to for that bone to heal even more. So, you know, it's that that's what gives me a little hesitation. He might not even be ready for that Thanksgiving Day game. You know, maybe it's after that, and maybe we're just looking at Aaron Rodgers basically coming back for the month of December, and they got to get through this next month without him. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I hope the Packers can go 2-1 out of their next three. Can they get three out of their next four, possibly, including that Lions game? That's asking a lot without Aaron Rodgers. That's asking a lot with Seneca Wallace, but we'll see. We'll see. I am interested to see how Wallace does with this entire week of work behind him, or, you know, in front of him now. You know, and how he performs when he's the man. I do think, you know, what was the word? He had like four snaps with the first team last week. You know, the entire week of practice. And I remember this happening the Super Bowl season when Aaron Rodgers suffered that concussion and missed a game. And talking about how much time Matt Flynn got, how much work he got with the starters. You know, these guys don't get much practice. And you, I almost sit here and I scratch my head a little bit and be like, why aren't they not getting more practice time than four snaps? I realize you're preparing Aaron Rodgers to be the starter and play the whole game, except maybe garbage time or something like that. But I mean, four snaps was all Seneca Wallace got. I mean, how do you prepare a guy, you know, like with the possibility that he could play, you know, practically the whole game like he did this past week? I don't know if there's any, you know, legitimate gripe there or not. I sit there and I do wonder that they should prepare these backups maybe a little bit more than they did. But anyway, it's in the past. Seneca Wallace is the man now. He's the starter heading into the week, and we'll see what happens. The word is that the Packers are looking into Matt Flynn as signing him. He cleared waivers yesterday. And what's interesting, too, is there were reports, multiple reports. I think the first one was by Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, and he wasn't the only one. I think Lance Allen of TMJ4 in Milwaukee had reported the same thing, and Tom Silverstein of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, all saying that the Packers would promote Scott Tolzien from the practice squad, and it didn't happen. Of course, the Packers made all these roster moves yesterday, and that wasn't among them. And so they still have one roster move yet to make. It's going to be adding a quarterback. It's just a matter of, do they sign Flynn, who's got this elbow injury that they're dealing with? And I don't know. I guess they bring Matt Flynn in and put him through a workout or have him in for a physical, because it kind of sounds like if he passes the physical, if they think he's physically okay, they might sign him. But that he's such a question mark physically right now with that elbow tendonitis. Basically, he's had it, as I understand, ever since signing with Seattle. He's kind of had this elbow tendonitis, and that makes sense. I mean, he's basically stunk ever since, you know, he left Green Bay in Seattle, in Oakland, in Buffalo. So, I can understand that injury is playing at least a part in this. Maybe not the sole reason, but, we'll see. We'll find out more today, perhaps, as the Packers kind of got to do something at the quarterback position. They got to add a backup now that Aaron Rodgers is out for some amount of time, even though we don't know the exact time frame or timeline of how long he's going to be gone. Other moves the Packers made yesterday is they kind of had to. Derek Sherrod's 3-week window on the PUP list in which he could practice had expired yesterday. So the Packers had to make a move, and they decided to activate Derek Sherrod, who's been hasn't played in a game since he originally broke his leg in December of 2011. We're talking about almost two full years now, just short of it. that he's been gone, and now he's back on the active roster, and the Packers could be looking his way real quick, especially if TJ Lang misses any time with this concussion. There's kind of an underrated, you know, it's kind of lost in the shuffle of this whole Aaron Rodgers injury, a couple other injuries that came out of this game, in TJ Lang being one of them on the offensive line. You know, Marshall Newhouse looked okay on Monday night. I thought he looked better than expected run blocking, but his pass blocking especially was, you know, he was victimized late in the game as the Packers were trying to make that comeback. And Shane McClellan, I know, put a few moves on Marshall Newhouse and got around him for a few sacks there. You know, that was disappointing. And you know, I know if TJ Lang's going to be out, Don Barclay's going to be your right guard. He's the starter there. You know, he's the guy who moves in. But could Derek Sherrod be an option? Is he ready to play already? Interesting. I don't really know. Is Derek Sherrod ready for game action? He has practiced for 3 weeks. You know, this week he'll be practicing for 4 weeks. Is he actually ready for game time action and hitting and getting back on it and putting stress on that leg? Not really sure. I mean, we'll see. We'll see what's going on and how the Packers deal with that situation. Because I think they would like to see, obviously, like to see him perform well. They'd love to see him be a starter, but don't really know if he's in that category yet in terms of the comeback from his injury and how comfortable they'll be in putting him out there. JerMichael Finley's season is done. The Packers placed two players on injured reserve yesterday, the other being linebacker Sam Barrington. He was injured in the Bears game, has a hamstring injury. He's done for the year. Good thing for the Packers. They have some decent depth now, obviously, with the way Jamari Lattimore has played at inside linebacker, so not quite as big a concern. The bigger news, of course, losing JerMichael Finley for the rest of the season. You know, not coming as a surprise, I don't think. I mean, you could see this coming, just the serious nature of his injury. You know, he sat there motionless on the turf in that Cleveland Browns game, and you know, you're just not going to take chances playing this year. I mean, I don't know what the future holds for JerMichael Finley. They couldn't take chances with him this year, which you know, makes sense. I mean, his quality of life is at stake here. The question does become now, what's in store for JerMichael Finley in the future? He becomes a free agent after season's end. And I mean, I don't even know if he's ready to come back. I mean, you look and you saw how the Packers treated the Nick Collins injury. He suffers a neck injury, and the Packers never clear him again to play again, nor does any other team in the NFL clear him to return and play. Will the same happen with JerMichael Finley? I guess only time will tell, and this is going to be a long... this is going to take the whole offseason to sort out. I mean, they're just going to let him simply rest and recover and recuperate for the next several months. And again, I mean, once the season is over, this will kind of become a story again. I mean, what do the Packers do in free agency? Do you sign JerMichael Finley? Is anybody going to be signed JerMichael Finley? I suppose that the silver lining here is that, you know, JerMichael Finley, if they do decide to sign him, or anybody does, it's not going to be for nearly as much money as he played for this season, which was, what, darn near $8 million, I think. You know, JerMichael Finley's not going to make nearly as much with, you know, coming off this serious injury. Do the Packers give him a shot, though? Hard to say. I really have no clue, and I guess, you know, it's really not worth examining at this point right now. You just kind of see how he heals and whether they're comfortable, you know, and you know, letting him play again, you know, hitting again. It's going to be a major story in the offseason. I mean, once February, March comes around, the story is going to come full circle, and it'll be There will be a lot written about JerMichael Finley in the offseason, is when you've got nothing better to do than speculate and see how it's going. I'm sure he'll visit specialists and things like that, and we'll perhaps get the occasional update on that. So we'll see. We'll see where JerMichael Finley is at come the offseason and what his future holds. So Packers, you know, placing two players in IR, activate Derek Sherrod. Still waiting for the Packers to add a quarterback, but practice preparations for the Philadelphia Eagles begin today in Green Bay on Wednesday. First day of practice this week. Seneca Wallace is the man, and the Packers, you know, the good thing is they get another home game. They don't got to travel this week on short week, which is good. I mean, they can kind of get back in the groove a little bit. They've got kind of one less day of preparations, one less day to recover from the Bears game. But, you know, all things being considered, having a second consecutive home game, at least they can feel good in being in a routine, being at home and not having to go on the road. But the challenge is definitely there without Aaron Rodgers. And we'll see how things go as this week progresses. We'll see how long Aaron Rodgers will be out. I'm not sure if we'll ever get a definite timeline or trying to figure out how long he'll be out. I'm not sure we'll get an exact, you know, estimate or, you know, time frame from him or the organization. But like I said, Seneca Wallace is the man. We see how he does, how the Packers do with him at QB this week. So thanks for joining us on a Wednesday morning, folks. Appreciate you joining us. Stay tuned all week long to Cheesehead TV for all your news needs. So we'll try to update you on situations as much as possible. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, I'm Brian Kirvu. We'll see you on Friday, folks. Come back 8:30 a.m. Central Time every Monday, Wednesday, Friday here at Cheesehead TV is Railbird Central. So we'll see you then. I leave you today with a song called The Surf by Lotus on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go. I'm